You're listening to There Ought to Be a Law, the Center for Auto Safety podcast with Executive Director Michael Brooks, Chief Engineer Fred Perkins, and hosted by me, Anthony Simino. For over 50 years, the Center for Auto Safety has worked to make cars safer.
Hey folks, don't set a Tesla on fire. I know you want to. They can just do that themselves. Welcome to another episode of the Center for Auto Safety podcast.
Yeah. Are you referring to that? Was that an attack in Vegas or something like that? I think I briefly read about that yesterday.
Yeah. People, apparently, if you do a Nazi salute, your customers and potential customers turn against you and they respond by, you know, it looks like they're setting some Teslas on fire and smashing windows at Tesla's dealerships. There's no need to do that. Just don't buy the things. Or
do you think those folks are doing that because they don't think that autopilot and full self-driving are up to snuff? Or is it, you know, a different grievance?
I think it might just come down to what the Anti-Defamation League referred to as an unfortunate gesture. But from here's a little quote I came across this morning in the New York Times, quoting Senator Mark Kelly, an Arizona Democrat and former astronaut, said in a post on Twitter last week that he was selling his Tesla and getting a new vehicle. He later said he had purchased a Chevrolet Tahoe. I bought a Tesla because it was fast like a rocket ship. And he would know, he wrote in the post. But now every time I drive it, I feel like a rolling billboard for a man dismantling our government and hurting people. So Tesla, you're fired. He didn't set anything on fire. He didn't break windows. If you want to protest, I get it. But, you know, violence isn't the answer today.
Yeah, and if you really want to do something positive and work, you know, against some of the bullshit Tesla's doing, you can always make a donation to the Friendly Center for Auto Safety, right?
Oh, go to autosafety.org, click on donate, digging it. That's the second time you've ever done that in the entire series. Love it.
And Michael, you're going native. This is very interesting.
Wow. Soon Fred and I won't even need to be here.
That is not gonna happen, kids.
Okay, all right, let's continue. So listeners, brace yourself. I think the first 20 minutes or so, maybe a little longer, is going to be a lot of Tesla focused. From an article in Politico, there's law firms representing several families who've died or seriously injured in Tesla crashes involving their self-driving urge the transportation department to continue scrutinizing the electric vehicle company because they are afraid that Elon, since he's in charge, he'll cut all that stuff. Quoting from the article, "We are deeply concerned that NHTSA's oversight of autonomous vehicle systems may be weakened, especially when it comes to the potential for that rule to be repealed. We fear that this important measure is under threat given recent media reports and the influence of DARE leader Tesla CEO Elon Musk, whose company operates the most widely used ADAS systems in America." Oh, perfect timing for Michael to chime in, and he's run away. But he still had his headphones on, so he heard the whole thing.
I did. There are a lot of victims and families of victims out there whose, you know, family members have died in Teslas that were operating on either autopilot or full self-driving. And they know how important it is for the government to continue collecting data on this. You know, we talk a lot about level two, level three, this supervised autonomy, where there's really just no widely established scientific basis for how these systems are supposed to be able to work and keep the human involved at the same time. So there are just the systems that are being created by manufacturers are all over the place in how they monitor drivers and how they ensure drivers don't become complacent and continue to watch the road. But really the only way that NHTSA and the government have a way to exercise any oversight of this was the standing general order, which collects or requires manufacturers to report all crashes involving this kind of technology. That was set up in 2021. We have expected it to be killed under the Trump administration because of not only just Elon's presence, but also because of just the fact that it is an order that was created by the administrator of NHTSA that can be rescinded anytime. You know, it's not a rulemaking that the agency would have to go back and dot a lot of I's and cross a lot of T's to get rid of. It's something that they could suspend at any moment. So having had an acting administrator for a month now, I thought it might already be gone. But on Monday, when I clicked through to the NHTSA website on the SGO, they had updated the data through February crashes. So it means it's still running. The data's still being reported. And the data sets are still being made public. So there's good news there, although, you know, we're still kind of got the standing general order on a death watch because we expect at some point that this administration is going to get rid of it, along with a lot of other rules that try to rein in some of the what automakers might call innovation, we call unsafe in many respects, but they're willing to put it on the roads because it makes them money while it only threatens consumers. So we remain concerned, along with the victims and their families, that this administration is going to do bad things, not just to the standing general order, but in the area of autonomy, partial autonomy as well.
Hey, Anthony, I got a question for you.
Sure.
If they were building a Piggly Wiggly in your neighborhood, how close could you get to the actual construction site?
I can get up to the fence line. I mean,
Why do they have a fence line around it?
Because of a case in the late 1800s where kids fell in. I'm making that up, but probably. They put fences around it. And in New York City, they have part of the regulations is the fences, they have to have little windows, little peepholes in it, so you can pop in and see it. But you have
isn't
to
be Fred an attractive nuisance or something like that. Sorry, I'm reaching into my legal terminology, but it's something that you would expect people to be attracted to and want to do, but yet it has a danger that they can't really recognize, and that makes it need to be protected.
Okay, so I've been in lots of factories. Let me interrupt. I've been in lots and lots of factories, and whenever there's dangerous machinery, there's always some kind of barrier around us so that only people who are specially trained and are qualified to work within that environment are able to access the dangerous machinery. So, Michael, I have a question. How is it that AVs, which are dangerous machinery, are allowed to operate in public with no safety barriers or no safety provision to keep the public away from them? You know, these are clearly dangerous. They're clearly not immune from danger to the public. Is it just because people started seeing cars 100 years ago and, you know, they were driven by people and they got used to them? And so have we just allowed these vehicles through incrementalism to just creep into our society? These are dangerous vehicles. They're dangerous machinery. They should have barriers like any other dangerous machinery that the public can access.
I think full self-driving should be just referred to as an attractive nuisance.
Well, when you have a backdrop of all of these companies making billions of dollars and lobbying in every state and federally and locally to ensure that rules aren't put in place, under the guise that all innovation is good, all innovation that makes us money is a great thing and it needs to be supported, is essentially their philosophy, then you run into this problem. And so functionally, the American public becomes a test bed or we all become guinea pigs in that system. You could make a similar argument for non-vehicle related issues like, you know, YouTube or Twitter or TikTok. You know, we're unleashing these supposedly awesome innovations on the public without having any idea of the negative impacts they're going to have. And then when it comes time to regulate them, the people behind them have so much money that they can hire a billion lobbyists and suppress any type of meaningful regulation. I think this is going on across our society in a number of areas beyond vehicles.
I think all innovation is good was the sales pitch for the Dalcon Shield, wasn't it? See, I can jump into obscurity of tort law too.
Hey, Anthony, one aside here. My sister listened to the podcast last week and she said she thought you were funny. So I got in a big argument with her, but you know, I just wanted to pass that on.
How do I delete Fred from this podcast? All right, that's good.
You can do that. There's a button in Zoom.
Yeah, I don't know how that button works. Last time I did that, there was hands clapping. So, Michael, these rules that we're talking about here, because I'm going to focus us back, is this related to the crash data? Because we have an article from FreightWaves.com. Everyone listens to FreightWaves.com. And I'm going to quote from it. Jonathan Morrison, who has been nominated to be the administrator of NHTSA. Is he now the administrator?
He's acting, so he's not been confirmed.
Okay. He was the chief counsel at NHTSA during the first Trump administration when the agency had allegedly been involved in suppressing key crash data. So this proposed rulemaking published in April 2023 during the Biden administration concluded that the cost to the trucking industry of such a requirement, reporting crash data in ADAS systems, estimated to climb as high as $1.2 billion, outweighed life-saving benefits.
Right. So there was a underride, basically heavy trucks. There was a proposed rule issued in the Biden administration that wanted to get underride guards onto heavy trucks. You've probably seen these. They can really prevent bad outcomes in crashes where vehicles run underneath a moving semi. You can imagine what happens there. So there was a studies conducted by NHTSA during the Trump administration, 2019-2020 time period, where a lot of the study kind of just removed all of the information or all of the data pertaining to pedestrians, bicyclists, and motorcyclists or vulnerable road users. Removed all that from the study, and so the Biden administration comes in, relies on this study, which is clearly flawed, in order to put out its proposed rulemaking, which ultimately had a far lower number of life-saving benefits included than it could have had the initial study been conducted properly. So that's essentially the issue here.
Okay, so I misspoke. I thought this was about ADAS related stuff, and it is not.
No, this is about heavy trucks. And you know, there have been a very dedicated group of side underride guard advocates who have been working on this for many years. A lot of them are victims or family members of victims. And when NHTSA did this, you know, this wasn't, you know, there was a pretty good ProPublica article that came out on it, but also, you know, IHS and the National Transportation Safety Board both criticized NHTSA for not including that data in the rulemaking. So, and criticized, you know, both the Trump administration for not including the proper data in the study to begin with, but also the Biden administration for crafting a rulemaking around that. They should, you know, they both bear pretty significant responsibility for moving forward without the facts. So it's concerning. And, you know, I think this article is really kind of a warning to what could be going on, you know, right now over at the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the DOT generally, where, you know, when you want to, when you put a rulemaking out that's going to impact industry and you know, basically increase their costs to some extent, you also have to show that you're going to have a lot of benefits that are going to far outweigh the costs to industry. You're going to have a lot of public benefits. That you're going to prevent deaths, you're going to prevent injuries and everything that comes along with that. So when you, if you go into the study, you know, years before you do a rulemaking, if you infiltrate the research side of the DOT and the studies don't show great benefits, then the chances of a regulation being promulgated that can succeed are lower. And the industry knows this. That's why, you know, the American Trucking Association has been implicated in this debacle, along with the NHTSA research department. So it's troubling. And also I think it's a warning about what's happening on the ground right now at NHTSA, you know, and the attack we've seen already on some of the research areas of NHTSA by DOGE and the Trump administration.
And so
hey, what's the going price for a human life or DOT calculations?
I think it's I think it's right around $10 million right now for the federal value of life calculation.
Wait, this is a real thing?
Yes.
Why are you both so nonchalant about this? Yes, of course, a human life, 10 million.
Well, because that's just how they do it. That's why I brought it up. A lot of people don't recognize it. When they do a cost-benefit calculation for regulations, they say, well, human life is worth X, and the cost is going to be Y. So if Y is greater than X, we don't need to worry about these people.
Oh, this sounds like a
when
scene
you're,
from
Fight when you're Club. Using it, when you're using it to support a regulation that is ultimately going to save lives, I would suggest it's one thing. When you're using a calculation of how much a life is worth to determine whether you should conduct a recall on fuel tanks that are exploding in your cars like GM did in the 80s and 90s, then it's a whole nother ball of wax. But either way, it's, you know, you're worth more than you thought you were, Anthony.
This segment of the show brought to you by the Ford Pinto. That's right, the Ford Pinto. For only $4, we could have saved your life. Next.
Mine was green.
I'm sorry. Thank you for sharing. Okay, so I apologize to listeners. I thought there was another ADAS related thing. So I'm going to bring us back into the world of automated vehicles. This is from USA Today. And this is fear-mongering. That we've talked about quite a bit, the fear-mongering brought to you by the Alliance for Automotive Innovation. Quoting from this article, if the federal government fails to act to advance sensible AV policies, we will cede our leadership in this economically crucial sector to China. Multiple agencies and state regulatory regimes create inconsistent rules, risking safety gaps and eroding public trust. The lobbyists at the Alliance for Automotive Innovation, they want the U.S. Transportation Department to not require human drivers to operate self-driving commercial motor vehicles and allow self-driving trucks to use cab-mounted warning beacons instead of devices requiring drivers to physically deploy them. Basically, what they want to do is say, hey, this technology doesn't work. We say we know this because they've admitted that they can't get automatic emergency braking working above 28 miles, 30 miles per hour. But hey, let's forget all of that. Let's get rid of those pesky people with their smells and the safety things and their desire to live and replace them with technology that we've admitted doesn't work. Let's get it out there because China! Michael, we've talked about this nonsense of China before.
Yeah, I mean, just from the start, I mean, that was that's definitely a gaslight candidate claiming that the driverless cars are an economically crucial sector. I mean, we're still debating whether that's even a thing. But beyond that, this was a letter that we haven't seen yet because they haven't made it public from what I can tell, that was sent by the Alliance, but also signed onto by the Consumer Technology Association. You might know them from CES. They are kind of the acolytes of the All Innovation is Good movement, as well as Fred's favorite, the Autonomous Vehicle Industry Association. So this is a large coalition of groups basically telling Transportation Secretary Duffy, we want you to get a national framework in place so that we don't have to listen to these pesky states and localities where people are actually going to be impacted by this stuff. And that's what they want to do. They want to bulldoze something through the federal government that's going to preempt states and localities from being able to do anything about driverless vehicles when they decide to put them on their roads. So that's about as... Well, there's really not much else to it, right?
Well, it's also worth noting that the same companies are members of all of these organizations. So when three organizations try to create a groundswell of public opinion, it's really one cohort of companies that are just coming at it three ways. This is a classic technique of right-wing propaganda to, you know, generate bullshit from many directions and try to overwhelm the regulators with this pile of bullshit.
So it's just John Bozell and two friends? Or is it just John Bozell and two mayors?
You can never put the blame directly on, I don't believe, directly on the Alliance or the ABIA. I mean, they have people from those industries that are giving them the money to operate and telling them what to do. So this is Waymo, this is Zooks. These are the companies that we talk about all the time that are behind this. As we've probably said before, these are just the mouthpieces for those manufacturers.
Well, I'm going to claim this is my gaslight of the week then. This nonsense that we must rule the self-driving industry world. And as a bonus, I'm going to throw on still, forever, until they fix it, the business model of Waymo. The math still doesn't work. Come on, Google, stop lighting money on fire. It will never be profitable. Hey, who wants to do a gaslight next?
I've got one that's coming from that area, right? So my gaslight came from an article that we haven't discussed yet, but the gaslight itself is from the Zook CEO, who said, you know, we're still putting the foundation in place and making sure that everything we've said we're going to do, we're doing. Well, Zook CEO, you said in 2023 that you had certified your vehicles to Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standards, as reported by NHTSA in their December 2024 analysis of your vehicles last week. You haven't certified them to the Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standards because they can't be certified to the Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standards. So that's my quick, simple gaslight of the week. Everything you've said you're going to do, you are not doing. That's from a puff piece in the Wall Street Journal this week that we may or may not get to.
Yeah, we essentially just got to it. So my favorite part of this Wall Street Journal article that we'll link to is this is the first time I see a front-on view of the Zooks. Every other picture I've seen is just the side view, and it looks like kind of a retro toaster. But from the front, you look at it and go, aw, this is something the kids at Caltech built. Because it does not look like a vehicle that anyone should get in. From the front, it looks incomplete. Incomplete, I think, is the safest way. But also, it's that weird design where you sit in and you're staring at the passenger across from you. I don't know who wants to do that. I don't know.
I think you could put a bag of microwave popcorn in there and get some good results there.
Oh, microwave popcorn with your Zooks. I love it. Mr. Perkins, gaslight us.
My gaslight this week is a little bit complicated, but it'll be quick. It'll be quick. It traces the AV industry from its origins in sea slugs. So in the 1960s, the neuroscientist Eric Kandel discovered that the California brown sea hare, a species of sea slug with a very simple nervous system, can be trained to ignore stimuli that would otherwise cause an untrained animal to recoil when trying to evade a predator. They found that they became habituated to the deadly threat and learned to ignore it. Well, Donald Trump is doing much the same thing. He is just spewing out so many dangerous and illogical and irrational statements all at the same time that we've all learned to ignore it. We can't, you know, we can't take him seriously because we've only got so much serotonin to, epinephrine and whatever those hormones are. Milkweed?
Dopamine.
Yeah, milkweed, milkweed too. Sure, smoke it if you got
milkweed,
it.
Milkweed is for monarch butterflies.
That's right. I got confused. So Donald Trump has learned from sea slugs and the research on sea slugs how to manage public opinion relative to all of his nonsense. The AV industry does much the same thing. It's actually presenting a real threat to the public, as we discussed, this dangerous machinery from which the public is not excluded. In fact, the public is encouraged to use this machinery and to ignore it when it's in your presence. And they say that over and over again, that their first priority is safety. And they just keep spewing this to basically habituate people to the idea that even though the stimulus is there, it's not a problem. So I am giving this week's gaslight nomination to the AV industry for assuming that we all have the mental capacity of sea slugs and can be trained to ignore the very real threats that AV proliferation causes, both to the people who are in the vehicles as well as vulnerable road users in the vicinity of these vehicles.
So, Fred, was this the California brown sea slug? Is that what you said?
Let me see here.
Yes. Okay. That's right. And it has a very simple nervous system. Now, that's not to say that AV supporters also have a very simple nervous system, but, you know, some people might draw that conclusion.
Because I believe the California brown sea slug is the name of the makeup that Donald Trump wears on his face.
It could well be. And it could be that his hair is, in fact, one of these sea slugs that have been habituated to lie down in the face of danger. I'm not sure. Could go a lot of different ways with that.
Hey, listener, have you subscribed? Have you liked this? Have you given us 5 stars and an amazing review? You have? Oh, have you told all your friends? I know you haven't. Come on, do it now. Go to autosafety.org. Click donate. Do it. Yeah. All right, let's jump back in to another in the world of Tesla and Cybertrucks. Yeah. I don't know if we could hear that, but part of Michael just died. It was this death knell. And actually, hey, supporters, your donations will help go to, we're going to buy acoustic paneling for behind Michael so it stops his weird reflections. Hopefully I'll edit those out. But anyway, this is from electric.co. People are trying to get their Cybertrucks, and there's something they're being told by Tesla delivery specialists. Aren't job titles stupid? By Tesla delivery specialists that there's a containment hold on all Cybertruck deliveries. I have never heard of a containment hold before, but Michael, I'm going to ask you to explain that a little bit more in a second. But this is, and we've talked about this because somebody did this on their YouTube channel, where the stainless steel from basically the front of your dashboard that goes above your door frame and wraps around just flies off. They have it glued on. Remember, this is the bulletproof exoskeleton. Turns out none of that was true. It's just glue and stainless steel. Well, maybe the glue isn't holding, but all of these things are just flying away. And, you know, this is, I think this is related to the 11,000 Cybertrucks that were recalled because of trim detaching, but this might be a new issue. But before we jump to that, Michael, what is a containment hold? And have you ever heard of such a thing?
That's basically just them saying, you know, federal law doesn't allow us to sell a vehicle while it's under recall. So the recalls have to be prepared before a manufacturer can sell the vehicle. And that's essentially what it is. You're basically, it's also called, typically called a stop sale. Essentially, when you're a manufacturer, you put out a recall, you immediately notify all of your dealers across the country that they have to stop sale of all of those vehicles because federal law prohibits the sale of a vehicle with a recall. There was a comment in the article that suggested that stop sales have to be publicly reported, and I don't think that's correct. The recall has to be reported, and a stop sale is essentially a part of a recall. Anytime you have vehicles, I mean, if you're recalling vehicles in the current model year where you still have them on dealers' lots, anytime you issue a recall on them, you have to stop selling them immediately. So that's essentially what a containment, whatever they're calling it, is. You know, Tesla likes to come up with new words for old things.
I don't know if any of you have seen the 1980 movie starring Kurt Russell called Used Cars, because they no. did something that maybe Tesla should do is bumpers were falling off the car, so they would use bubble gum and hold the bumpers onto the car and sell it. So, hey, Tesla, if you're listening, you know, just start chewing.
Well, I mean, the sad irony here is that, you know, Tesla Cybertrucks are falling apart on the outside, but when you really need them to come apart, like, you know, in a fire where you're trying to get people out of them, it's harder to get into to rescue folks. So they don't come apart at the right time, I guess is what I'm saying.
The right time, right after you dropped $100,000. That's the right time. Before we go into the Tao, I want to jump to a topic that we regularly talk about, called big fat cars. No, big heavy cars. Ars Technica has an article titled "The 2025 Cadillac Escalade IQ First Drive, 460 miles on a single charge," and they're talking about, hey, it's an EV. You can go 460 miles on a single charge because it weighs 9,000 pounds. Yeah, all battery, no brains.
It's only a matter of time before we start seeing crash rates go up due to collisions between these gigantic passenger vehicles and smaller cars. There are not enough EVs out on the road quite yet for us to start seeing that, but the weight disparity and the compatibility, the weight incompatibilities between these vehicles is going to end up killing a lot of Americans, and nobody in the industry seems to want to talk about it. Let's just pop a new Cadillac on top of the Hummer chassis and, you know, make it weigh 9,000 pounds and then mass market it to America because we're going to make money off of it. So, you know, a few people die here and there. Nobody really cares. We can set this system up and we're not going to get in trouble for it. It's just the latest example of the industry putting on blinders to a clear safety problem. You know, if you want to put out electric vehicles, put them out in sedans, put them out in small SUVs, put them out in ways that are compatible with the current vehicle fleet. Stop creating these monsters that really only appeal to assholes, and stop putting them out on the road. And because we know what the result is, physics is undefeated and people are going to die because of the problematic weights of these vehicles.
Well, as bad as that sounds, it's actually worse, because this really reflects the cynicism of the automotive industry. People buy these things because they're electric and they're going to save the world, right? They're ecologically beneficial because they're electric. But the size of these things ignores the fact that all of the materials that are going into it are actually difficult to get, expensive, and environmentally destructive. And the benefits that might accrue from electric propulsion really are not there because these vehicles are so damn big. So their size and the absolute mass of these overwhelms whatever ecological benefit you might otherwise accrue by driving an electric vehicle.
But it comes with the Dolby Atmos system.
Well, that's important. I have to rent a car this week, and they gave me a Jeep Extreme Wagoneer or Ultra Wagoneer or some damn thing.
Oh,
God bless you.
Oh, it weighs it. It's such an embarrassment. I can't stand it. It actually has a running board so that you can climb it. Yep. Thing. So it comes with a built-in ladder, and you know you're sitting 20 feet above the driveway and. Holy crap, I'm so embarrassed by this thing. But I don't know what the Hummer owners do. They have to climb up to a similar height, but it's an interesting ethos that finds these things attractive.
My wife just completed this week-long safety training, and so she regularly up and down ladders, and now she's like, "Oh my god, I have to wear a helmet all the time. Like I need a hard hat. This is dangerous stuff." So Fred, when you climb in and out of this vehicle, make sure you have a hard hat on.
Well, my skull is unusually thick, so I'm not sure that I need it for that.
All right. Fair enough, then. Hey, speaking of thick skulls, let's go into the Tao.
Here we go.
This one. It's titled, Is It AI or Is It Bullshit?
I do like that. And when we're talking about bullshit, we have to go back to the Princeton philosopher named Harry Frankfurt, who sadly died in 2023, who wrote the book called On Bullshit, which I've recommended before. We'll put this link up again because everybody should really buy and read this book. And when they talk about bullshit in this particular article, which is by Springer Nature Link, and we'll have the link to that as well, I'm going to quote just a couple of sentences from that. Quoting, "We argue that these falsehoods and the overall activity of large language models is better understood as bullshit in the sense explored by Frankfurt. The models are in an important way indifferent to the truth of their outputs." And so when we're talking about bullshit here, we're talking about computer output that is completely indifferent to the output. Now, these completely indifferent to the truth of the output. And if you think of it for a moment, Every computer output is indifferent to the truth because truth is a human concept. And people tend to anthropomorphize about computers and say, well, they're just like people, right? So they lie, they cheat, they steal, they do all these things. None of that's true. Computers just provide data and people interpret that data in ways that fit their own ethos and the way that fits their own perception of the world. So they go on to say that we argue that neither of these ways of thinking are accurate insofar as both lying and hallucinating, which is part of what people talk about when AI comes up with crazy results. They say that it's hallucinating, they say that it's lying. But anyway, insofar as both lying and hallucinating require some concern with the truth of their statements, whereas large language models are simply not designed to accurately represent the way the world is, or rather to give the impression that this is what they're doing. So that's for large language models like ChatGPT. But the same is true for AV controls that are using AI. The AI doesn't care about what's happening, and it's not interpreting things in the way a human would interpret them. So let me give you an extreme example of that, okay? So a human seeing a baby crawling in the street or by the side of the street in an unattended car seat, which actually happened to one of our listeners, right? That was Jeanette's problem. Anybody seeing that, any normal person seeing that, will take care of the infant first. They'll stop and care for the infant. They would call the police. They would make sure that the infant was taken care of, right? So what the person driving the vehicle does in relation to that visual input is based upon their entire ethos and their entire ethical basis and their care and concern for another human being, however small. But an AV who is looking at that same input, who's looking at that same child crawling across the street, will just say, well, this is just an obstruction. This is, you know, I'm not, unless it's specifically programmed to look at obstructions and determine whether or not they are human beings, it's just going to say, well, is this something small enough to roll over or do I have to try to avert this, right? They're not going to think in terms of this child growing up and being grateful for the fact that a stranger preserved its life. So this is the problem with AVs and AIs. They don't interpret things the same way we interpret them. It's not fair to say that their interpretation is lying or their interpretation is wrong because they simply don't care about facts. They simply don't care about the truth. They are programmed to look at the next few milliseconds of operation and see that it's consistent with what they've been programmed to do. And that's based upon the statistics associated with their perception. Now, no AV that I'm aware of, or no AV control that I'm aware of, has a specific module that looks at obstructions to determine whether or not they're small human beings. They look at it in terms of risk, and the algorithms look at it in terms of risk. And risk, unfortunately, has two components. One is the consequence. The other is the probability of occurrence. So any risk-based AI control would write this off as being so unlikely that we don't need to care about it. Any human being confronting that situation would say, this is actually something that is critically important. I'm going to respond to this immediately. So that's what this article is all about. And that's why it's important, because the misinterpretation of data is a human responsibility. And the fact that AI-based control systems are indifferent to the truth and indifferent to the consequences of anything except the very short-term commands that it's going to issue to the car control system is a big problem and will cause a lot of death and injuries to people down the road. So I hope that makes sense. Did I lose you, Anthony, or are we still there?
No, I'm totally still here. It actually makes me think of when AI research first started in the late 50s, early 60s. the people behind it were like, why did we call it artificial intelligence? That's a mistake. We're trying to create real intelligence, trying to map the human brain. But then you fast forward to today with ChatGPT, these large language models, and it is artificial intelligence. It's very advanced math, but it's a parlor trick. I mean, because there's no reasoning behind it. There's no intelligence there at all.
Right. Because it doesn't, no computer has got the ability of internalizing the information it's putting out and qualifying it as truth or lies. It's just data. It's only the humans who are looking at the data that's coming out who have the capacity to internalize this and say, does this make sense or does this not make sense? The computer simply doesn't care, can't care.
No, it doesn't care. But you know what cares? We care. Autosafety.org, click on donate. Hey, thanks for doing that. Somebody just did. I don't know if anybody just did. It just felt like encouraging people. Hey, so we got this sent to us from like 300 listeners, and it's a cool piece. Is a YouTube video from this guy, Mark Rober, who I've seen some of his videos before, and I'm like, but this one I love. So what he did is he took his Tesla and said, hey, my Tesla, it's self-driving, full self-autopilot nonsense. It only uses cameras because Dear Elon said, hey, we only need cameras. I only drive my car using my eyes. Idiot. you know, so that will work in the real world. So this guy did is he's like, all right, let me compare how a car with a LiDAR will deal with braking things. And so he puts like a model of a child in the road. And hey, the camera of the Tesla and the LiDAR system of some other car, they see it and they stop. What happens if it rains? And they put rain there and the LiDAR system works. Doesn't hit the kid. Tesla, bam, dead. Fog. LiDAR system works. Doesn't kill the kid. Tesla, dead. Kid, dead. But then he does what every little boy has always wanted to do. He recreates Looney Tunes and he paints a giant billboard that looks like the road continuing. So from your perspective, you're like, that's a road continuing, except for you're a human, because you'd see like little things that are like, that's not quite right. You'd see little ripples and a sound stage around it. The LiDAR obviously stops and doesn't go through this barrier, this fake road, fake wall, but not the Tesla. The Tesla goes full speed, doesn't even bother to stop, and just goes bam, right through it. Moral of the story is this video is so much fun. And camera
based. Yeah, you left out the best part of the video, really, which is he mapped Space Mountain with LiDAR, right? Space Mountain's never been seen before. But yeah, this is basically a confirmation yet again of what we've been saying for a long time now, which is cameras alone are not going to be enough to drive autonomous driving. And you know, and Tesla is essentially doubling down on a lie by continuing to claim that cameras on their own are going to be able to do this. In fact, I can't imagine that Tesla is going to be stupid enough to try to introduce a robo taxi without a driver onto the roads that's solely using cameras as a source of its information.
So Fred, I'm going to ask you a question. Imagine you see this giant thing and it looks like the road ahead, but you notice the wind hits it and it gets tiny little ripples in it. Now you as a person, you're gonna be like, that's probably still the road, let's keep going. Or you're gonna be like, I'm gonna slow down and figure out what's going on here.
Am I a roadrunner or a coyote in this
No question? you're Fred Perkins, the 8 foot tall man.
I'm not sure. I think I would probably detect it as a barrier, but you know what? I always think of myself well.
Well, I mean, from watching this video, you can obviously see there's like, you know, little ripples because wind hits it. So your artificial intelligence inside your head is smarter than Tesla's artificial intelligence, which is best I can tell. I don't even think it's a thing. I think it's just 1,000 people drawing lines on maps of roads.
Well, I'm not an AV supporter, therefore I don't have a simple nervous system.
Is brown sea snake. It's the sea snail.
Slug.
Sea slug. sea slug driving.
It does look like a big booger, by the way.
Oh, boy. Anyway, the very fun video. Totally check it out. If you like Space Mountain, check that out, too. If you're a Disney employee, put this guy on your banned list, okay? Speaking of something that should be on my, that's on my banned list, let's go back to my best friend, Waymo. An article in the New York Washington Post talks about how, titled, "These Driverless Taxis Got 589 Parking Tickets in San Francisco Last Year." Quoting from the article, "Waymo vehicles driving themselves received 589 tickets for parking violations in 2024, according to records from San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency. The robots incurred $65,065 in fines for violations such as obstructing traffic, disobeying street cleaning restrictions, and parking in prohibited areas. Waymo vehicles without a driver received an additional 75 tickets in Los Angeles in 2024, with $543 in fines still outstanding, according to records from the LA Department of Transportation." Now, how many drivers does Waymo have? Because I'm going to make the assumption that they have one driver. It's one computer system. Now, it's a computer system that's managed to clone itself and put itself all out there. And now me as one driver, if I got $65,000 in fines in 1 year, I'm pretty sure Geico would drop me. I could be wrong.
Well, you'd probably lose your driver's license, but happily, the AVs don't need driver's licenses.
How is this? I've asked this 100 times on the show, but how can somebody, because they try to make the argument at times that we're just, you know, a single driver. How can a single driver get $65,000 in fines and still be on the road?
Well, I don't know if you're looking at it. You know, let's look at it from the other perspective, right?
Not from Gavin Newsom's perspective.
You can't issue a parking ticket to a driver. You're issuing parking tickets to an unoccupied car, typically. And Waymo has, you know, 300 vehicles operating in San Francisco. You know, and from a numbers perspective, it doesn't really seem like a big deal, right? Waymo's probably getting about the same number of parking tickets as your average San Francisco resident. The ones that I'm concerned about, I mean, there are a lot of different types of parking tickets. Some indicate that you can't read a street cleaning sign, or you can't interpret, you know, certain rush hour restrictions, that kind of thing. There are other ones that are issued when you're blocking a road or holding up traffic, creating what is a clear safety issue. So depending on what type of ticket you're getting, and this article goes into that somewhat with the data on the tickets, you could be creating a safety issue or you could not. So in that case, what this really makes me wonder is why, if these vehicles are being programmed to, you know, presumably read signs or to understand the parking regulations in the city, why are they getting these tickets? Well, there's something wrong. They're clearly not perfect, and they're clearly not really much better than humans at parking if they're receiving this many tickets. So maybe there is a concern there about just how well Waymo is programming its vehicles to operate lawfully on city streets, programming them. Are they reading the signs, the parking signs and the parking regulations? Are they programming the San Francisco parking regulations into these systems? It doesn't look like it, because otherwise you don't think they would be receiving these tickets. So there are some concerns there, although, you know, the safety concerns really center around vehicles that are blocking or preventing traffic from moving.
I'm going to put something else out there as a thought. Maybe what's happening is these Waymos are all high and they're all smoking the marijuana. The next article is AAA has an article on how cannabis consumers view driving while under the influence. And we've already seen Waymos drive drunk, so maybe they're just a little stoned. From this article, they did a survey trying to figure out what do people who are high, or well, what do cannabis consumers' behaviors and perceptions of themselves. And part of it says they believe consumption has little effect on driving. 46.9% believe they either drive the same, a little better, or much better. And to that, I have to say, no, you don't.
Yeah. This is really concerning. I mean, you're looking at the data here. 84.8% of people are driving on the same day they consume cannabis, presumably after they consume it. They're not smoking before they go to bed. And 53% saying they use cannabis an hour or less before driving. Come on, people. If you're gonna smoke weed, don't drive. It's pretty simple. It's certainly not making you drive better, a little better, or much better. And why take the risk? I mean, if in a lot of states, and we've discussed this before, the fact that you have a detectable amount of marijuana in your body, could be used whether you even smoke marijuana that day. You could have smoked it the day before and it'd still be in your system because of the imperfection of all the tests that are out there right now. Why would you take that risk of getting on the road? I mean, if somebody runs out in front of you and you hit them, and it's not even your fault technically, if you have to do a blood draw or be tested for the presence of THC metabolites and it shows up positive, there's a good chance you're going to jail for a long time. So I don't know. I don't know what do I have to think about this survey other than there are a lot of stupid cannabis consumers out there. Can I make any other conclusion here?
No, I know a cannabis consumer who was convinced that they were a better driver high. Like, no, I drive slower. And then I showed them all the bills they had to pay at the body shop. And no one was
like someone
injured.
You know well.
I don't know what you're talking about. this is a fascinating, and it also again leads to the issue we've talked about is, you know, with alcohol, it's clear cut, and we know how it metabolizes through the system. Marijuana, they don't know yet, and it will vary from individual to individual.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, some people probably can smoke a joint an hour later, drive a car, and be fine. A lot of people, no way in hell. If only the federal government or somebody would study this.
Yeah, and you know, it might help if they broke it out, too, into, you know, people who smoke versus people who are eating edibles, which seem to have a more profound impact on some people's ability to function.
Yes, that will last much longer. Speaking of people who are probably a little high at work, I'm going to say car makers. That's right. An article in the Wall Street Journal titled "Car Makers Are Reinventing the Gear Shifter and Drivers Are Lost." So with things going to drive-by-wire and there's no more mechanical linkages between what you're doing, like moving into gear and shifting, and it's all just done by software and relays, designers are just like, all right, let's move things around and confuse people. So the person who's a tester, I think, for the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety said he couldn't find the gear shifter and it's an Ioniq 5 Sport utility vehicle. Now, Fred, you've driven a number of vehicles in your day. If you're going to look for a gear shifter, you sit into a modern car, where are you going to look to put your car in drive? Where are you thinking it is?
I actually experienced that one with this Jeep behemoth that I had to rent. And I looked around for a while, and they've got a dial on the console.
A
dial on the console where the gear shift lever ought to be.
Yeah, wow. I think it looks a lot like the Pacifica minivan they have a picture of in the article. That's kind of what Chrysler went to. In fact, Chrysler Jeep was one of the first companies to really start doing this, and they had some issues at first. I know we've talked about the Anton Yelchin, the actor who was killed when his vehicle rolled over him. That was when Chrysler was using a monostable gear shifter that didn't really give the driver good feedback on when the vehicle's actually in park. I believe they've moved away from that, but we're continuing to see gear shifts put all over the vehicle in very different spots. We know Tesla allows shifting on their touchscreens, but I think they have another system as well that controls gear shifting. The more interesting one that I saw in this article was the crystal sphere
from Genesis.
That Genesis is using that looks more like, you know, I don't know what to call it.
Like that orb that Trump and the Saudi dictators put their hands on in 2016. That's what it looks like. It's creepy. Yeah, so.
But it's weird. They're saying, you know, Genesis had a statement on its crystal sphere, which they say is to enhance safety, which is bullshit, and to create an emotional connection with the driver, which is probably a lot closer to the truth, although I don't ever recall being emotionally connected to my transmission shift lever, but you know, maybe that's just me.
You're not sitting correctly in the car.
Maybe. Yeah, it sounds like typical Genesis over the top marketing to me.
Yeah, well, this Hyundai Ioniq 5, they hid their shifter right where the tucked behind the steering wheel, kind of like where your windshield wipers are. So that's got to be fun driving down the street. Oh, it's raining. Oh, I'm in reverse. Like, this is just, it's three on the tree and you're dead.
Well, I mean, there are no rules requiring a gear shifter to be in any one specific place. You know, it doesn't have to be, if now that it's not really required to be mechanically connected to the transmission as it would have been in the past, you know, the sky's the limit for where they could put these things.
But there's got to be a human factors team inside these auto companies. I mean, I know there are at times because they've run into problems with
really?
Sudden acceleration.
Have you heard of a company called Tesla?
Okay, yeah, I'm talking real companies who've been around.
And you wonder, like, yes, there are human factors teams inside most automakers, but, you know, do those human factors teams get the last say over the marketing department when they want to put a crystal ball in to control your transmission? I don't know.
See, this is
going to
be,
think so.
This is going to be my version of a Fred rant. See, when I worked at Apple, they had this massive book called the Human Factors Guide or the Human Interface Guidelines. And the entire company, like, you're writing software, you're following this. So everything's going to hear. And this is the font we're using. This is the location of things. The third party software developers, they had to conform to this. Then at some point, Steve Jobs just like, I'm drinking juice all day, man. And hey, let's try and make your calendar look like it's a leather thing. And they threw that shit out the window and software became harder. And so I'm trying to think, the ghost of Steve Jobs is working at Hyundai now. Whoa, mind blown.
Whoa.
And with that, it's time for recalls. Let's kick off with General Motors.
Didn't you just recall Steve Jobs?
Too soon? No, it's not.
No.
General Motors, 90,081 vehicles, the 2020 to 2021 Cadillac CT5, CT4, CT6. Really? The Chevrolet Camaro. General Motors decided that a defect which relates to motor vehicle safety may exist in certain of these vehicles. Transmission control valve in some of these vehicles may be susceptible to excessive wear over time, resulting in a gradual loss of pressure within the valve that can cause heart shifting. The wheels may temporarily lock up. Oh, that's not good.
No, it's not good. It looks like GM's been looking into this since around September, when one of their a brand quality manager inside of their company spoke up under their Speak Up for Safety program, which resulted in this investigation, and they found that they are having problems with transmissions locking up. Possibly, it sounds like what you're more likely to experience when this happens is that you're going to be limited to fifth gear in their new software that they're going to put into the vehicle. They're going to limit you to the fifth gear when they find out this is happening. And owners should hear about this sometime in late April, it looks like. And I don't see that they're going to, you know, I don't see where they're going to be fixing the actual valve wear and the problem, right? They're putting transmission control module software in that monitors the valve performance and detects wear. So rather than getting a fully functioning part in the vehicle you purchased, you're going to be getting a free call software fix that's going to essentially warn you and try to prevent you from experiencing the lockup, but they're not going to actually fix the problem.
Wait, and so my car is going to be stuck to fifth gear? Hey, you bought a piece of shit. We've warned you. What? I mean,
I assume at that point, if, see, here's the thing, if you're still under warranty, you'll be able to bring it in and have it repaired for free. If not, then you may be responsible for repairs. So this is kind of their another reason we call it a free call for General Motors. Instead of repairing the actual problem part, they're going to put in a software patch that might get you to that date where you no longer have a manufacturer's warranty and you'll have to pay for it yourself. How nice of them, right?
So would you suggest if I have one of these vehicles still under warranty, just go in right now and be like, replace the valve?
Demand the replacement.
Yes, and they should pay for that. You shouldn't have to pay for that, right?
Under your warranty, yes. Now, good luck, because they've created this, you know, this is a big recall. They've got 90,000 vehicles out there with this problem, and they're not going to be willing to do that repair on every one of them. So good luck.
They probably could afford to do it if they didn't blow all that money on GM Cruise. All right. Next recall, final recall, Jaguar, recalling all of them, just all of them. No, 7,276 vehicles, the 2025 Land Rover Range Rover, the sport version of that. A concern has been identified where you bought a Range Rover. The second row center seat buckle may have been manufactured away from specification. Oh, one of the jigs used at the buckle supplier did not secure the buckle's internal cable in the correct location during a riveting process. Uh-oh. So the tongue may appear secure when correct latching has not occurred. Hopefully they're going to physically fix this and not be like, use some software to let you know that little Billy's not going to live.
They're actually going to replace the, it looks like the center seat belt buckle. I think this is on the second row, center seat belt buckle and the retaining bolt, for free. And owners should hear about that. It looks like starting at the beginning of May. Also on recalls, I will note that, just an early check-in on manufacturers and recalls this year. Ford, it seems like 2025 just started, but Ford is already at 24 recalls, and the closest manufacturer to them has 7. So out to a really, really early lead in the standings, Ford is.
Hey, Jim Farley, come on the show. We'll give you the award. You can be declared the winner right now. And with that, that's the end of our show.
One thing I want to throw in here. Everybody hates daylight savings time, and I've got a solution for that. Okay, so here's the solution. In the spring, instead of setting the clocks back 1 hour on a Sunday morning, we set the clocks ahead 25 hours on Sunday night. So what that would do is it would immediately skip to Tuesday. Everybody hates Monday, so this would be a great thing, right? And then in the fall, on a Saturday, you set the clocks back 23 hours. So we would get an extra Saturday. So I think this is a great idea, because the visual impact is the same. You still have the same, you know, adjustment of the clocks to the sun. But we'd have one fewer Monday, which nobody likes, and we have an extra Saturday. I think this is a great idea. So
I think everyone that wants more time off work would support that.
Oh, yeah. And who doesn't, right?
I'm all for double Saturdays. That's
so you. Anyway, this is not patentable, so I share it with the public for free. You're welcome.
Ah, the benevolent Fred Perkins, everybody. Till next week. Oh, and lightning. We will be covering lightning in the future. I know we teased it last week, but lightning is definitely coming. Till next week.
Double bye. Saturdays. Yeah. Bye.
Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
I like that, Fred.
For more information, visit www.autosafety.org.